Hello, this is your host, Donald Altman, and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. The world's wisdom traditions tell us that life is precious, that we are connected to all living things, and that love is one of the greatest gifts we have, one that can transform our lives. And yet, so many of us struggle, not just with love, but with making sense of this precious human existence. It seems that trauma nowadays is at the forefront of the cultural conversation. But in the background, if you listen closely, another song is playing. It's the harmonious tune of possibility and hope and the manifestation of your dreams. And yes, love. The Buddha said, we are what we think. With our thoughts, we make the world. He also said, hatred does not cease through hatred. Hatred ceases through love. This is the unalterable law. The question now becomes, how can I manifest a different kind of world, a more loving world? To help explore the subject of manifesting love in our lives and in the world is Arielle Ford, a leading personality in the fields of personal growth and spirituality. For the past 30 years, she has been living, teaching, and promoting consciousness through all forms of media. She is a celebrated love and relationship expert, author, and speaker. Her mission is to help people find love, keep love, and be love. And I love that. Arielle is a gifted writer and author of 11 nonfiction books, including the international bestseller, The Soulmate Secret, Manifest the Love of Your Life with the Law of Attraction. This excellent book, by the way, has been published in 21 languages and 40 countries. Other popular books include Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate and Wabi Sabi Love, the Ancient Art of Finding Perfect Love in Imperfect Relationships. Currently, Arielle is completing her first novel and coaching private clients who are seeking to manifest love, the love of their life, write their first book, or pursue a new passion project. She lives in La Jolla, California, with her husband and soulmate, Brian Hilliard, and their feline friends. Well, it's an honor and a pleasure to have Arielle Ford here with us today. Hello, Arielle, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hey, Donald. It's been a long time. It's so great to reconnect.
Oh, well, thank you. Same here. And, you know, a lot of people feel they're unable to find love. I was reading the other day about the number of people who are on online platforms, for example, trying to find love. But I was struck by your own story of how you found love that I read in your book, The Soulmate Secret. And I was hoping you could share that with us. And also, how does that illustrate the law of attraction?
Well, first, let me say that there is no shortage of love in the world. Mm. And online dating is the fastest, easiest way to find love. 40% of marriages now begin online. So we can talk about that later. But okay. I just want to start with there's no deficit of love in the world. Okay, none. And there's no shortage of potential soulmate life partners out there. Mm. You know, what there is that gets in the way is people's mindset and negative belief systems. So we can look at all of that. But my sure. My story is quite magical in that I was a very late bloomer. I was a first-time bride at the age of 44. And it all came about because I woke up early one morning when I was 43 with this epiphany, which was, oh, my God, I forgot to get married. And I started thinking about how did that happen? I was at a point in my life where I had this very successful business. I had a wide circle of friends. I was in great shape. I owned a condo in Beverly Hills. I had a sports car. I was traveling. I had it all, except that I didn't have anyone to share it with. Mm-hmm. And when I started looking at, well, how did I get all the things that I had? I realized it had been very intentional. I had been studying the law of attraction, or back then we just called it plain manifestation, for quite a while. And I thought, well, let me make a list of all the things that I've done in order to create this great life for myself. And then I'm going to apply them to my love life. and see if it transfers, see if it works. And I'm happy to report, yes, it does work. It totally works. So there's a system to it, and I detail it extensively in my book, The Soulmate Secret. But quite simply, it's about really understanding what the law of attraction is. So the law of attraction states, we draw to us the people, places, and experiences that match our state of being, that match the frequency at which we're living. So if the belief is, I'm a kind, loving, compassionate person deserving of great love, then it's more likely you'll pull that in, as opposed to, I'm too old, I'm too fat, I'm too damaged, all the good ones are taken, I live in the wrong city, you know, the one that was got away, and all this other BS that people feed into their brain. So the process of manifesting anything is simple. It's not easy, but it's very simple. And it begins with a desire. What is the desire? What is it your soul is most calling for? And once you identify the desire, then you get clarity. Well, what would that look like? You know, so when I knew I had this desire to manifest a life partner, what would that look like for me? And in order for me to know that, I had to go into the past to see all the stuff I knew I didn't want. I had to do an autopsy on my relationship history, which was not fun, but worth doing. And at the end of it, I came up with a couple of must-haves. And my greatest must-have was I wanted and desired a man who was very generous, not necessarily with his wallet. I was earning a good living. I didn't need anybody's money. I needed a man who would be generous with his time, his love, his attention, appreciation, his affection. Somebody who, right? So I could
I'm glad you say that. Yeah, I'm glad you say that, because sometimes we think of generosity just in terms of the financial side of it. And there's so much more about generosity of spirit that somebody could have to offer.
Right? I wanted somebody with a generous heart. You know, so that was my number one priority. And then I had some other things. I wanted somebody who led a healthy lifestyle, not one that I dictated. You didn't have to do what I did. I just wanted someone who was committed to a healthy lifestyle. Yeah. Somebody who had English as a first language, which was important to me because my life is all about words. And I had learned from growing up in Miami, where the official language is Spanglish, is that words have different meanings in different languages to different people. And since communication is key to the core of who I am, I wanted us to be starting from the same place. You know? And there's some funny stuff that happened along the way, because Brian's only language is English, but what he does to the English language, I couldn't have predicted. I didn't get exactly what I asked for, you know, and then I wanted somebody who was financially responsible. So it had nothing to do with how much money does he have or does he earn, but is he responsible with the money that he has? And will he be responsible with our money? Because my core wound that I came in with is poverty consciousness. And that's a whole other long story, but I knew that I needed to be with somebody who wasn't reckless with money. You know, they, of course, would be different because that's how it gets set up.
Right.
You get your polar opposite. But so financially responsible and generous with their heart. And then, of course, the single most important thing to making a relationship work is having a shared vision for the future. Did we want overall the same things? You know, and and I don't know how long it took me to make this happen, because at the time I was doing it, I never planned to write a book about it. I wasn't keeping track. But I would say, you know, within 18 months, you know, Brian and I met through some really mystical, magical circumstances. And today is actually the 25th anniversary of the day that we met.
Well, fantastic. Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, when you met him, how did sparks fly? Everybody talks a proverbial moment.
Here's what happened. Two things happened. The moment we saw each other, it was weird. And it was weird for a couple of reasons, which I later found out. he recognized me because he had been seeing my face in his dreams. So he was freaked out. And I was freaked out because the moment I saw him, I started hearing a voice speaking to me that I'd never heard before. And the voice kept saying, he's the one. This is how it happens. Yeah. This is who you're going to spend your life with. And I'm like, what? I don't even know his last name, you know, and I'm hearing voices, and I was doing a liver detox at the time. So I'm thinking, I'm losing it. You know, I must be hypoglycemic or something. So a lot of weird shit happened. And we met at a business meeting. Everybody who was in the room saw what was happening. So it happened really fast. We ended up getting engaged 3 weeks after we met.
Wow.
But being a very grounded, sane person, I told him there would be no weddings for at least a year, because even though it looked like we were meant to be, I needed to know him. I was, you know, 43 years old, and I wanted to make sure if this is the biggest decision of my life, I need to know this guy, not just go with the feelings, which give me one more second here, because here's something I did know that I really learned. Most people really believe that love is a feeling. And while there are some good feelings to love, you can't base your decision on the rest of your life just on feelings, because the state of being in love is not love. The state of being in love is your brain on drugs, some of the best drugs you'll ever take. You know, it's dopamine and oxytocin and adrenaline, but it's not love. You know, love, here's the shocker. Love is a behavior. Love is a choice. It's a decision. It's an action. It's a way of being. And there are good feelings that come and go, but that's not what love is. So I had I became a student of love after I got married, when I discovered my soulmate wasn't perfect. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I had all these magical thinking things going on that, you know, of course it's going to be perfect. And suddenly I'm up against all this stuff. So I've spent really the last 23 years researching and studying this stuff and understanding what love is, and that the single most important thing you can do is choose wisely when it comes to picking a partner.
Yeah. And so the choosing part is not, it's connected with the feeling, but it's different.
Well, you have to understand that it's like there's so many components to it, and there's science and there's research to back it up. What it takes to have a long-term, happy, committed relationship is having connection, compatibility, good communication, which can be learned, some chemistry, although chemistry is not the most important thing. And as I said earlier, the most important thing is the shared vision for the future. And you have to get over this belief that there's only one person out there for you. There's no shortage of potential partners.
How do you find that shared vision with somebody, or how do you find out what their shared vision is?
Well, I mean, it's actually an easy conversation. You know, I knew what was my core values were. I knew that I had to always live within spitting range of the ocean, right? I'm a cat person. I cannot live without a cat, right? I love to travel, you know, and I wanted somebody who would be my best friend and my safe place to land. And the only way you know that is by spending time with them, you know, because let's say I was 35 when I met him and I wanted to have children, which I never wanted to have, you know, it would have been different, because I told Brian the day I met Brian, before I knew his last name, I told him I never wanted to have children. I needed to have that in the space instantly, because that's not something you can negotiate. You either want kids or you don't want kids. Yeah. So that's sort of the easy part, the shared vision. You know, I want to live here, and I want to live under the same roof 24/7, or I want to be in a committed relationship, but we live separately. And that's happening now with people who've been divorced 2 and 3 times. They're pretty sure they don't want to get married again, but they do want the committed relationship, but they want to live separately. And we live in a world now where you can design it any way you want it.
That adds a layer of freedom, but also a layer of complexity in some way, I guess, too.
Well, you know, Harville Hendrix, of course, who's the godfather of all things to do. Oprah calls him the marriage whisperer. I mean, he knows stuff. He believed that the purpose of marriage, the purpose of taking sacred vows, is that you then live in a safe container with another, where it's safe for all your childhood wounds to arise and be healed. That's the purpose of soulmate love is healing.
That's a beautiful sentiment, actually. Yeah, I love that.
And it's also true, right? Because there's nobody like your partner to mirror back all your mishigosh.
Right, and that you can be free enough to let that show, to let it out.
Right, which actually, that is my definition of a soulmate. I believe a soulmate is first and foremost someone you can completely be yourself with, somebody with whom you share unconditional love. And when you look into their eyes, you have the experience of being home.
Oh, that's beautiful. Let me ask you about unconditional love for a moment, because everything seems so conditioned. When we go to the store, everything's marketplace oriented, kind of a, and I think a lot of people enter a relationship in a marketplace way. Well, I gave you this gift, why didn't I get a gift back, right? There's a kind of a marketplace mentality, and it's based on conditions. How do you get to a place of that unconditioned love?
Because that's why you have to understand that love is a behavior and a choice and a decision. Because as anybody who's been married knows, you can be crazy in love with your soulmate life partner, and there will be moments or days when you hate them, and it doesn't mean that you don't love them. So unconditional love is about being a real grown-up and choosing to love the one you're with, right? Warts and all.
Yeah.
Or what I like to call wabi-sabi love. In Japan, there's an aesthetic called wabi-sabi.
And tell us a little more about that wabi-sabi concept and how your book came about.
Sure. So wabi-sabi honors all things old, worn, imperfect, and impermanent. And it seeks to find beauty and perfection in imperfection. So if we walked into a Japanese museum, and they have this old, ancient, priceless Ming vase that has a long, crooked crack down the middle of it, most likely you will see that broken vase on a pedestal with a spotlight shining on the crack.
Well, that's really interesting. It's kind of appreciating the flaws.
Right. Well, I mean, that's what, you know, that Leonard Cohen says, that's how the light gets in through the broken spaces. That's how the light
gets in.
And we all know we're imperfect. It's no mystery there. All of us are imperfect. But can we love ourselves and another and include their imperfections? Because if you can't, then you can't love unconditionally.
Okay.
So it's not for children.
Yeah. So in other words, we need to not just acknowledge, but accept those flaws in our
and maybe partner. Even love them. You know, I mean, imagine this. Imagine that Maria does something really bad.
So Maria is my wife. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And you're her defense attorney. You have to represent her in the court of humanity. And you have to explain to the judge and the jury why she did what she did. So imagine in your own relationship, she does something hurtful to you, but you know her history. You know what her childhood was like. You know where her buttons are. And you would defend her to the judge and the jury, saying she's normally such a loving, kind woman, but when she was 6 years old, ABC happened, and this is why this happened, as opposed to killing her off because she was just being herself. So that is also the role as the significant other. We're here to defend each other, protect each other, take bullets for each other, and love each other on the good days and especially on the bad days.
Well, I love the idea that we can apply our mind to looking at these things and remembering that's why we're together. We're here for each other. We're here to defend one another. I mean, there are a lot of challenges that we face in the world. So doing the challenge with somebody who you care about, who cares for you, makes it a little easier, doesn't it?
Well, it's kind of the whole point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we all need a witness to our lives, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a study that came out through Harvard that's been going on for 90 years now, where what they discovered is that the most successful people in the world, not the richest, not the ones who've won the most awards, but the most successful people in the world are married to their best friend.
Whoa, that's really interesting.
Yes.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was having a conversation with Maria, my wife, the other day, and we were talking about being best friends, and that we felt like we were best friends. And how does somebody get to that place if they're not, I mean, you fall in love, how do you know that this is your best friend?
Well, I say, watch what they do and what their behavior is versus what they say. You know, are they really there for you? Do they really have your back? You know, are they your safe place to land? Do you feel emotionally and physically safe with them?
Mm.
Can you completely be yourself and be honest and still be loved and accepted? That's why I wrote Wabi Sabi Love, because it's all about that.
Yeah.
In fact, let me tell you a story that really explains Wabi Sabi Love. So I have these friends, Jerry and Diane. Jerry's a psychiatrist, Diane's a psychologist. Jerry's 25 years older than Diane, and they got married. It was a second marriage for both. And when they got married, Diane didn't know about Jerry's addiction. Jerry is addicted to poppy seed bagels.
It doesn't seem like the worst addiction in the world.
Well, let me tell you more. So every morning, Jerry would get up an hour before Diane. He'd go into the kitchen and he would slice a poppy seed bagel, which would instantly send lots of little black seeds all over her white tile floor.
Mm.
And he would toast his bagel, he'd put a smear of cream cheese on it, and he'd walk around the kitchen eating his poppy seed bagel, dropping even more little black seeds on the floor. An hour later, every single morning, same thing, Diane gets up, and the first thing she does is wet a paper towel, get on her hands and knees, and wipes up all these little black seeds, because Jerry's much older and can't get on his hands and knees. And this is her job. Yeah. This goes on for a couple of years until one morning, Diane's in a really terrible mood. And as she's wiping up the little black seeds, she has this thought, what would have to happen so I never have to do this again? That was followed by the thought, oh, that would mean Jerry's no longer with me. And she got off the floor and ran to the other room to give him a hug. From that day forward, every morning as Diane was wiping up the little black seeds, her heart would fill with love, because these seeds now meant she had another day to spend with Jerry.
Oh, that's such a beautiful story.
That's what Wabi Sabi Love is. She didn't say, Jerry, we've got to talk. I'm going to leave you if you don't stop eating. I mean, Jerry never changed. In fact, just so you know, Jerry died 18 months ago at the age of 98, totally blind and still eating poppy seed bagels.
Well, that's such a lovely story of beauty, devotion, and really opening the heart toward another, and not being so stuck in our own mindsets, right? And having things to be a certain way.
Right. Well, you know, I say it's like going from annoyed to enjoyed. You have to reframe it, make up a new story about it, because every day your spouse is going to do something that you don't like, that's different from the way you would do it. And it never ends. Brian just came in here a little while ago and was carrying on about the ants and the cat food and the this and the that, because he doesn't want to kill ants. I'm like, well, just crush them. No, we can't kill the ants. You have to make them go away. And this is an ongoing thing that's been going on forever. And I have to, you know, it's my job to figure it out, because it's painful for him to kill an ant. For me, it's no big deal. It's like, hey, you don't belong here. Look, get out of here. So it's just, you know, the thing that annoys you isn't going to change. The only thing that can change is your story about it.
Yeah. So those are the ants of your poppy seeds.
Ants, exactly. They're little black annoying things.
Yeah. Right. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was this willfulness and destiny, the idea of the contrast between those two. And isn't that, could you explain that? That's part of...
Well, so since COVID started and I've had a lot more time not to be running around, being distracted and thinking and doing a lot more reading, you know, for years and years and years, I've been practicing the law of attraction and I've been teaching it and it works. And then I started thinking, well, yes, it works, but what if I stopped being willful? What if there really is such a thing as destiny? And I just made myself receptive to the good things coming my way without having to dictate what they look like. Maybe using the law of attraction as the way I've done is limiting in a new way. So that's the new concepts I've been playing with that I'm intrigued by is, you know, willfulness versus destiny. And right now I'm kind of doing a little of both.
So destiny is opening up to what, to possibility in a way, to what may or may not happen.
But it may be what's in
what is meant to
the
happen.
Karmic record, right?
Right.
And maybe being willful is a block to the highest good. Mm. So that's what's captured my imagination these days, is trying to live more in just being open and receptive to destiny, as opposed to, well, what does Ariel want? Yeah. You know, maybe the destiny is much greater than I could imagine.
Well, we will be looking for that book.
Oh, God forbid.
Well, you know, thank you, Ariel. I would love to talk longer, and there's a lot more we could explore, but we've run out of time. Let's be sure to tell our listeners about your website, soulmatesecret.com, and that's one word, soulmatesecret.com, and that's where you can learn more about Ariel's work. For those who turned into the Pathways Show late, this is your host, Donald Altman, author of several books on mindfulness, including my newest, the Simply Mindful Coloring Book, and Simply Mindful, a 7-week course and personal handbook for mindful living. Information about my courses, books, and CDs can be found at mindfulpractices.com. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want, via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with author Ariel Ford, a celebrated love and relationship expert, as well as a leader in the fields of personal growth and spirituality. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Donald Altman reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. Thanks again to Ariel Ford and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.